It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 219 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, Europe's biggest sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. It's easy this football lark, isn't it? I don't know what we were panicking over, to be honest with you. We spent about 8 months absolutely panicking every single week, and then Everton come away with three wins in a week. We secure our Premier League status for another season. Goodison Park obviously will be a Premier League stadium for its final season. And like I say, what was the panic all about? I just don't know. But it's been a week probably that we couldn't all imagine would happen. It's, you know, 6 days, three games, three wins, one including the Merseyside derby, no goals conceded, 9 points. And it's just been one of those, you probably say, un-Everton weeks. We never probably imagined that we would win all three games. I think a lot of us thought if we can come out of it unbeaten, you know, we've got 5 points, fantastic. If we got 4 points, wouldn't be the end of the world. And 6 points was probably a dream as well. But to get those three wins has just been something of a whirlwind, really. And it's hard to describe what it does mean after, you know, all the upheaval of this season, which continues. Obviously, we're not silly. There's still stuff happening off the field. But to secure our survival against Brentford yesterday was a massive step. You know, the club and the manager, the players, they deserve all the credit in the world. I said this after the derby on Wednesday. So to come away again with that win, with all the noise, and you listen to the manager yesterday after the game, and he refers to it quite a lot. No one thought we would do it, and we have. But Pete, we were there, of course, and it was a funny game, wasn't it? In terms of, for me, it had the feel of an end of season game. Brentford was safe before kickoff because of Luton's loss to Wolves, so we knew the script ourselves, of course. And that first half especially was very much like a bit of a pre-season friendly end of season game. Flip-flops and Hawaiian shirts and shorts were on, and it's you know, you say overall we probably deserve to win the game, but it was a little bit of a flaffiness of things first off, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was surreal, but look, I'll take that every day of the week over another game like Crystal Palace or Bournemouth, because I don't think I could take another one. So, you know, look, there's getting the job done in style. You know, there's having great stories to tell and look back on, and there's just getting the job done. And I'll take this every day of the week. Thomas Frank said the game was a bit boring and a bit flat, and he's right, it was. But you know, look, it is what it is, and we got the job done. I thought we were organised, disciplined. I thought it was a good performance. Obviously, no real standout performances, but it was good to see James Garner, I think, get back to a level of consistency and you know, put a really good performance in. Garner Gay as well. It was great to see Chimiti get you know, near enough 90 minutes, wasn't it? Because I think he's earned it in the little cameos that he's had off the bench. I think he's, for his age, he's shown maturity and quality. And what I really like about Chimiti, I think, is his level of commitment. I think you can rely on him despite his age, and I think he's got really, really good potential. So I was pleased for him. Obviously, you know, would have loved for him to get on the score sheet, but I thought he did really, really well. Look, we hit the bar twice as well, so we were definitely the better team, and we were definitely the team that deserved to win. But yeah, you're absolutely right, Mike. I think going back to that Chelsea performance, I don't think anyone would have predicted that we would have responded in the way we have. And as usual, when Everton do something really well, they just get no recognition or credit. And I absolutely loved Sean Dyche's response to the media when he was saying, you know, look, everybody wanted us to lose and Luton to win, because that's exactly the feeling and the response after the match. You know, there's been such little recognition of how well Sean Dyche has done and how well the club's done. So I think it's really important that, you know, we're able to highlight that on the podcast before everyone starts inevitably looking forward.
Yeah, I think you're right, and we will discuss the manager's comments a little bit later on. But before the game, you mentioned obviously Chimiti there got the start, and Ashley Young obviously from the off because of Mikhailenko's injury. So we were without Mikhailenko and obviously Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who had a terrific game against Liverpool on Wednesday. And you saw that the subs bench, you know, two goalkeepers, three young kids, and the squad was massively stretched anyway before these couple of injuries. You look at it yesterday, we had this conversation ourselves that fatigue might play a factor, both mentally and physically, for Everton because of the fact it was our third game in 6 days. Brentford, as we said, had already confirmed the survival. They got a great win against Luton the previous week. So we thought, and we said it on social media before the game, this could be a tricky game. So if we come away with a point, it wouldn't be the end of the world. And a point would have pretty much cemented our place anyway because of the goal difference, the difference between ourselves and Luton. But you want to get over the line officially, don't you, and get that win. So it was no surprise really. That first half was a little bit slowing. And again, Sean Dyche did say after the match, he thought that we would start slowly. You know, he wasn't under no illusion that we were going to go out there and take it to them. And he said he did change things. So we sort of went with a midfield three almost just to see how things played out early on because of the fatigue factor, probably more than anything else. And then second half, the Corey got that little bit closer to Chimiti. And we probably started to see that, I think, in the second half, the change that the manager made and the approach that we had second half, because we were certainly in and around the area a little bit more and creating a few more chances, that's for sure. But Lee, I'll come to you. You've got to be relieved, I'm sure, as we all are this morning after that yesterday. And what kind of words have you got for the players and the manager in terms of what they've done this week and how they sealed our fate almost yesterday with those 3 points?
Well, I put a little tweet out yesterday with a little gif, Tommy Shelby, wasn't it? I think out of all of us lot, out of us three, I was the calmest out of us three boys, you know, in terms of staying up. Look at Mike. If only everyone could see Mike's face here, rolling his eyes. I always give one or two of you a post-match call after the game to have a bit of a debrief, and those calls were lacking, shall we say, after a few results more recently. Because I know what you're both like, Pete especially. I know you love a sulk, don't you, Pete? But to be fair, no, joking aside, I think it was always going to be a flat game yesterday. But we said that then when we said on the podcast, it was always going to be difficult to raise it again after such a great result in the week. Three games in 6 days. you know, under the Sky cameras again, dying for us to lose, as Pete was alluding to there with Dyche's comments. But I thought the players deserve huge credit. You know, let's not forget as well, before the Chelsea debacle, there was another win at home there as well, wasn't it? So it's four wins at home, four clean sheets in five at the perfect time of the season. And, you know, as Dyche keeps referring to, we should be on, was it 40, 41 points now? 44 points even, sorry. I'm even giving ourselves another points deduction there. But no, in all fairness, and that's level with Brighton. I know Brighton have got a couple of games in hand, but let's be honest, Brighton are lauded as a really good side and a well-run club, and let's be fair, they are. But it just shows you how the narrative, isn't it, can be easily turned, just by pundits, columnists, everything else. But you know, as I said before, the players, with what they've had to go through these last few months, they've done incredibly well to get safe with a few games to go. I did not want us to go into that Luton game whatsoever, having to get a result. You know, again, under the Sky cameras again, wasn't it? 8 at night, Luton's ground bouncing, hoping for effectively, you know, a kind of like giant killing type thing, isn't it? Sending Everton below them or whatever. But now we've pulled away. And I don't know whether you boys have seen the Premier League tweet, which they've since deleted. Have you seen it? Well, I know you have definitely seen it, Mike, because obviously you mainly run our Twitter account. But that just sums up the pettiness, isn't it? And the unprofessionalism, you know, the comments that they came out. For everyone that's not seen it, straight away the Premier League tweeted, you know, subject to points deductions. Brentford are now, you know, Sheffield United are down and effectively Brentford are safe or whatever, you know. Everton and Forest subject to points deductions or words to that effect. And that just sums it up. That just sums up the debacle that has been this season. But going back to the original point, like I said, Dyche, as well as the team, deserves huge credit. We've been critical of him on here at times, and rightly so. You know, the one win in 15, he kind of alluded to it in his post-match yesterday, saying about how, you know, he did end up changing the style of play, didn't he? He said we were more expansive and open and threatening early on. And then once the points deduction started coming in, the appeal hearings we were waiting for, he definitely changed his tack, didn't he? He became more pragmatic. Every point was celebrated like a win and so on and so forth. So you could see the relief in his face as well. You could see it. I mean, he's had a hell of a lot of pressure on him. I think you've used the phrase before, Mike, there's not many managers that would have been able to deal with that. I think he said to Jags in the studio after the game, saying, look, this is not what I was sold. This is not the dream I was sold, so to speak. You know, not only have we had to deal with, you know, points deductions, you know, on-field issues, injuries, small squad, you know, we barely got anyone representing us on the board. He's become almost the spokesperson for the club. You know, we've got all these, you know, are we going into an administration? Are we not? We've got the takeover going on. Is that going to happen now? There's others maybe sniffing around it. You know, all that going on, all that noise, as you said, he calls it. And then he's then trying to, you know, galvanise and pick a team to try and get a result at the weekend. And that can't be easy. That can't be easy whatsoever. So hopefully now we can get all those issues sorted off the field, so we can now try and build a side going into, you know, what will be the last season at Goodison Park. And I'm hoping, you know, he will now. I've been critical of him at times, but at the same time now, he's earned the right now to try and, if we can, depending on how these takeovers end up happening, what happens with these takeovers, try and build a team, you know, capable of pushing on now mid-table and onwards, and trying to be that side where we're not having to worry about relegation.
Yeah, it's nicely put, and the manager's been through a hell of a lot. And I had a quick chat with Phil Haywood, obviously, who comes on the show, the fourth wheel. I said last night, I don't think I'd trust many other managers with the club at this moment in time, to be honest. You know, there's a little bit of noise around Dyche, there's a little bit of noise around others. And I just think that he's been the ideal manager for this football club. And he deals with things, we've said it time and again, he deals with things particularly well. He's got very broad shoulders. He can bat things off quite well. Obviously, inside, he probably deals with things totally differently. But I think he's done a terrific job in terms of, you know, what's it been, 12 wins. In those 12 wins, we've had 10 clean sheets. We've just won 3 games in a week. We won our first home Merseyside derby for 14 years. You've had 2 points deductions, totaling 8 points. You've got an appeal still ongoing for one of them, which, by the way, before people start panicking, we ain't going to lose any more points. These appeals will be either you're stuck with your 2 or you get any back. We ain't getting any back either, by the way. But if I'm Everton, I'll say it right now, pull the appeal. Just pull it. No points. Absolutely no points. What is the point in going through all this nonsense now? Get it pulled. We know exactly where we are. So it doesn't really matter.
It's also an up yours to the process by pulling it now as well, isn't it? Yeah. And I'd go as far as to say, when the hearing's due to be had, the appeal hearing, literally on the day of the morning, I'll just say, oh no, we're pulling it now. I just do that. I just literally do it, you know, almost like an up yours saying, oh no, forget it. Or even the night before saying, don't worry about it, we'll leave it. Do you know what I mean?
We don't appeal
to the process.
We don't owe the Premier League a thing. That's what people need to understand. We don't owe them anything. And what's gone on has been a travesty. We've covered it time and again. You know, everyone knows our feelings, and it's probably echoed by most of our listeners' feelings on the situation. So in terms of doing things correctly and giving them due notice, I couldn't care less. They decided to kill this football club and decided to relegate us. They wanted 17 points. And by the way, if we had a 17-point deduction, we still be bottom three now. So how does that look? We should be 19 points clear of the bottom three. So obviously the manager's done particularly well, of course, deserves great praise. And Sky Sports putting us on the telly, five games on the spin. So what was it? Chelsea, obviously Forest, Liverpool, Brentford, and then Luton. There is your narrative. Everton part of the relegation party. Let's watch it. It's all falling apart, and Sean Dyche has ripped up the script. Fortunately for us, and unfortunately for them, because next Friday means nothing at all now in terms of us. It doesn't mean a thing. So I'm delighted. I'm absolutely delighted that the manager and the players have come through this, and you know these 3 games in 6 days to come through, win all 3, not concede, win a Merseyside derby. That's unbelievable to actually do that. And when we look back on this month, you know. April has seen us win 4 games. I think we drawn one, which is Newcastle, and then they lost the game at Chelsea. So it's been some month, and what a turnaround for this football club. And no one saw it post Chelsea, even after beating Burnley the week before, which was a real scrappy win. No one thought we'd go away. Obviously after beating Chelsea and then come back and win all these games on the spin. So absolutely incredible. But one of the players who's been a standout was again yesterday, it's got to be said, is his goal that got us the 3 points. He's turned into a prolific player in front of goal all of a sudden. It's just a Garner game. And Petey was outside of his goal again yesterday. You mentioned James Garner, who I thought had a terrific game. You know, he was back to his busy self, wasn't he? He was on the ball a bit more, carrying the ball as well. But Garner Gay again, you know, another standout performance from him, another terrific finish for his goal. And is he now pushing for that new contract, which doesn't seem to be there at this moment in time?
I'll give it to him. Give it to him. It's an absolute no-brainer, isn't it? I mean, the amount of football he's been able to play at his age, you know, to a consistent level, God, you know, bite his arms off. Not to catastrophize too much, but if we're potentially considering selling Onana, or you know, that seems within the fan base to be considered to be almost like a nailed on, and you know, if you look at his the percentage of the time that you know he's had in the squad, some of the things that have been popping out on social media, it really does have that feel. You know, give Garner Gay a contract. You know, he's reliable. He's still recording stats that puts him in the kind of the top three against the likes of, you know, Rodri and Paulinho for interceptions, and and tackles one. Give the man a contract. You know, he knows the club inside out. It fits into the system. I think it could be disastrous to let him go, and he will be snapped up by another Premier League side. So, you know, I really hope that's something we can get over the line. But no, he's been brilliant, hasn't he? He's been absolutely brilliant, and yeah, very unlike him to get two goals within a short space of time. But you know, look, long may it continue, and hopefully that's a sign that he's enjoying his football. And you know, he's happy to be here, and he wants to continue being here. But he's been so reliable for us, hasn't he? You know, this season in particular, but he's been a great servant to Everton. And I think, you know, the fact that he's come back to us when, you know, there were other good offers on the table, you know, it shows that the club is important to him. It is special to him. So he owes us absolutely nothing, but I'd love to see him stay with us for another season. But yeah, he's been brilliant the past few games in particular. And, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, leadership, don't we? And how important that is for Everton as a team, and it's something that's often been lacking. I think he's a really good example of someone that leads by example. He leads on the pitch. You know, he brings the momentum. He knows when to press. He rarely makes mistakes. He uses the ball so well. He doesn't just win it back. And I think sometimes it's the quiet things, it's the simple things that doesn't always get a great deal of attention and doesn't always get highlighted. So he's been monumental for us, and I really hope that he can be here for another season, because he helps the other young players as well. I mean, you mentioned James Garner there, who's got back to, you know, a good level of consistency, and he's clearly a very talented footballer. It's obviously done him the world of good to play alongside a player like Garner Gay, who is so, you know, reliable and experienced. So it'll have a big knock-on effect for our younger players as well.
Well, that's brilliantly put, that, Pete. Cast your mind back to when we signed him from Villa, didn't we? When Villa went down, and a lot of the time, I think we got him for like 7-8 million or something like that, or there or thereabouts when we first signed him. A lot of us would, you know, he's one of those players back then where you kind of like, bit of a weird signing that. I haven't seen him tear up any trees for Villa, and then that first game that he played at Goodison, if you remember, forget who it was against. You've got a better memory than me, mate. You just realise straight away, going, "Oh, hang on a minute, this fella is some player," and he is like very like Kante-esque, isn't he? He's quite shy. They interviewed him after the game. You can see he's quite a shy character, and you can tell he's probably not the most vocal in the changing room. Well, obviously, we don't know that for sure, but you can just tell he's, you know, very unassuming. Goes about his business. Does all the things that, you know, like Pete said there, you don't really notice a lot of it, but the players, he's one of those players where if he's in your side, you know, I'm glad he's in our side here, because the way he reads the game, and I've said this multiple times, the way he reads the game, the very rarely goes off his feet. You know, his tackling is so clean. He nicks a ball. He's one of those horrible players if you're playing in midfield to come up against, isn't he? Because he just nicks it off your toes. There's plenty of players that play in midfield that, you know, we'll pressure you and we'll try and press you, but they won't actually physically try and tackle you. They'll just jockey you and try and stop you from playing a pass in a certain way or playing it through the lines. He actually is in your face and he's nicking it off you. And he's so good at that. And like Pete said, invariably when he gets it, then it's normally, you know, a good pass or he's keeping possession and you know, effectively turning around the play. And he's deserved those two goals, you know, this week. And that goal again yesterday, I know he's not renowned for his finishing. That's a good finish. You know, it's dropped him on the edge of the box, kindly. But he's only got a small window to put that in. And he side-footed it with pace right in the top corner. And it's a great thing. And he deserves all the accolades. You know, hopefully he will sign a new contract. But as fans, you know, certainly of you know, the last, you know, five to eight years, he will go down as one of our best players. Played under multiple different managers. I think you'd do well to find an Everton fan that would not talk fondly about Idrissa Gueye, wouldn't you? And that's the type of player he is. He's, you know, universally liked by fans, by players, by any manager he's played for. You know, he ended up going to play, you know, high level Champions League as well, which shows you the level he's capable of. So I agree with Pete there. It's an absolute no brainer to offer him a new contract. Total no brainer, and it would reassure us as fans, even if we did lose Onana and then, you know, hopefully replace him, we've still got players like him in the squad there that can still play at this level. And by the way, comfortably play at this level. You know, his stats and everything else are still up there, like Pete said, with some of the best holding mids or defensive mids in the league. And it would be foolish of us to let him leave on a free. And I hope we do, you know, give him that extra year's contract.
And the talk is he wants regular first team football. Now, obviously, you can argue that he's getting it here, but I think he wants to be a starter week in, week out. And even at 34 years of age, he's proven how important he can be, especially in recent weeks for us. But obviously, with Onana obviously going out the door, it looks like there's a big hole in midfield, which we've got to look to fill. Obviously, Dan Juma, we're not going to keep him. It's obvious. Yesterday, again, the dice just doesn't like him. Because he should have got, given how stretched we were, he should have got some minutes yesterday and didn't get any at all. And when Michael Keane comes on a front ahead of you, it's going to tell you all that you need. But I suppose different kind of profile, of course, and we get it, but he didn't get the nod. Now he's, you know, Onana and
by the way, Mike, just quickly, you guys wouldn't have seen this yesterday because you were there. I could make it yesterday, but when Michael Keane was warming up and ready to come on, Idrissa Gueye had gone off. And obviously him and Dan Juma clearly a bond, aren't they? And Onana, they're like a three, you can clearly see. Obviously they celebrated with each other again with the goal, with Dan Juma's celebration. Now you could see Dan Juma was visibly upset by not being brought on towards the end there. And the fact that Michael Keane was, the camera zoomed in on Idrissa Gueye, and he was clearly having, shall we say, you know, a semi-heated chat with Dan Juma, who was, you know, I think Idrissa Gueye was essentially saying to him, look, you know, don't worry with this. And he was fuming, to be honest, that the fact he's on the bench, and since he has come back from injury, he hasn't even had a minute, has he? Now, I understand it's obviously high stakes and you know, Dyche would have been thinking yesterday, we need to be safe. I don't want to bring on a lad here that might lose the ball and then result in a counter-attack and a goal. Hopefully now, you know, with the fact that now we are safe, that he might give these lads a run out. But you could see, by the way, you wouldn't have seen it, as I said, but you could see him visibly upset, Dan Juma, that the fact they're bringing on a centre-half to play effectively up front for 5 minutes.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
And you understand why it would. It would get some obviously different profile to Chimiti and obviously Calvert-Lewin and Beto, of course. He's not a central striker almost. He couldn't really play in a one. But it was only for a couple of minutes. But I understand. I mean, I was surprised we didn't see him for longer, especially at 1-0 up. You know, give him sort of 10 or 15 just to come on and you know, run at them a little bit, and he can relieve the pressure himself. He's got that pace. He can get into the corner. He's got an eye for goal. So it wouldn't have been the worst substitution in the world to make, but it's almost as if, well, we're not going to be seeing you next season anyway, so I don't really care. And I don't think, you know, he didn't really sell himself to Dyche sort of early on. You know, after he started fairly well, I think when you started to see him, you know, he's defensively, he's not as good as your Harrison or McNeil. And once McNeil was back fit, there was no question he was coming back into the side. So, yeah, we obviously don't want to discuss anything too negative, but like you say, it was obvious, I think, for everyone there that, you know, the two of them, he probably doesn't like him as a player particularly. Dan Juma probably won't like the manager because he's been given no time, and I think that'll be cut short. But that might impact, as I say, Garner Gay's situation in terms of, you know, a couple of players leaving that he is close to. But we'll see what happens, obviously, as we go forward into the summer. But obviously, just to round things off in this part, it's just great to come away from the ground. It was strange. I mean, you were saying to me, Pete, when you're on the way back to the car, about it was a strange sort of feeling coming out. Obviously, we're safe, we're delighted, and you're still in the back of your mind. You've got the whole situation surrounding the ownership. You know, the fact now that'll probably come back to the fore. It wouldn't surprise me if it gets signed off this week. I've got a feeling that the fact that we hadn't secured our Premier League status was a factor in the whole thing. So don't be surprised if this week we see some kind of movements on that. But yeah, you're right in what you're saying. You know, even though we've stayed up, which is fantastic, and not many of the clubs would be able to do this. You know, outside of those sort of top clubs, any clubs getting battered with 2 points deductions, how it impacts you mentally is massive. How you then go into the games is impacted heavily. And if you haven't got the character, you don't come through. And we have. And that's a testament to everybody involved. But the ownership side of things, Pete, has got to be sorted now, hasn't it? Because we've got to go into the summer knowing exactly what we've got in terms of financially. Obviously, I'm sure Kevin Thelwell and the manager are working on targets and what we can do. And we're probably going to see a few bargain basement deals. It's got to be said. Let's be perfectly frank about that. But we've got to have that clarity now off the field in terms of the ownership situation sorted well before the end of the season, and let's now try and look forward if we can.
Absolutely, yeah. We can't have that uncertainty hanging over us going into next season because, as you say, it affects our financial viability across the board. You know, how can the club plan for incomings and outgoings if they don't have a stable sense of what our financial picture is going to look like? I mean, I'm still slightly in denial, Mike. I think you're absolutely spot on about maybe the factors playing into the timing of certain things being signed off in relation to the ownership. But I've still got a fantasy that the Leighton Baines and Duncan Ferguson conglomerate is going to come in and save the day at the 11th hour. And we're going to find ourselves with different owners. But sadly, I don't think it's going to happen, is it? And that, you know, maybe we don't get into that today, but 777, as we've touched on before, are an entirely different kettle of fish and a completely different model of football club ownership than Everton have ever known before. And, you know, arguably that the Premier League is known before. But it's something that I think fills me with a lot of concern and kind of reticence, because it does feel like you're hanging over the reins of the club potentially to a group of people who have got no interest whatsoever in owning a football club. Everton Football Club are a business to these people. And, you know, from what I can gather, the sense I get is they want to squeeze every last drop out of Everton Football Club and then move on. With no particular interest in what state Everton are left in at the end, because that has been the model, sadly, at you know, most of the other football clubs that they've owned, and even football clubs that like the likes of Genoa, who have had a little bit more stability and success, had to go down to come back. And again, the club are run and structured in a very different way. So time will tell what happens to us if it is 7-7-7, which is looking extremely likely. And you're right, we need that certainty. But I think, sadly for Everton, it's going to continue to be a very strange time for a little while. I do think our saving grace, again, though, is the fan base. That's something we've spoke about outside of the podcast. I think people that aren't connected to the club and maybe look at Everton from afar don't understand who we are and don't understand our people. And I think if something isn't right, that the fans will be the first to come forward, and they'll come forward like, no disrespect to the likes of Standard Liège or Genoa or Hertha, but Everton fans will come forward like no other fan base. And as you say, we've demonstrated that in recent times.
Yeah, well, we're about to enter our 121st season in the top flight, which is the most of any other club. And I will give a little shout out, and Mike, you'll have seen this doing the Twitter account, you know, the likes of, you know, and I never thought I'd say this, you know, people like Stan Collymore have come out and been very vocal about it, and they really, you know, saying how much them and Villa in particular are clubs that should be cherished, you know, grand clubs, that, you know, if you speak to a certain generation, football only started in 1992 when the Premier League started. You know, to go in and be, you know, into the last ever season at Goodison and be in our 121st season in the top flight is some achievement. This is a grand old club. We've all fallen in love with it, you know, from a very young age when we all first walked up the steps at Goodison Park and laid eyes on that pitch. I mean, we've all had that same story and that same feel for the club. It's a beautiful football club. There's not many like it. You know, with the way the game is corporatized these days, you know, you can see how a lot of people do fall in love with Everton. You know, even more recently, people like Ancelotti, who've come from, you know, big clubs in Europe and things like that, and being you know, affected by what Everton has on you and things like that. And it needs to be looked after. It needs to be cherished. And we just have to hope that, you know, now you are right, Mike, with us now confirming our Premier League status, it will have an impact on the value of the club, you know, in terms of like the security of the income coming in next year now from TV deals, etc. We've just got to hope that, you know, at the moment, if it does go through and whoever's investing, because obviously they're trying to raise money externally by the sounds of it, 777, aren't they, to meet the required criteria, that, you know, it isn't abused by people that don't understand what this football club is. But let's see what happens now. Let's see how it plays out. But I do hope that, you know, going into Bramley Moor, you know, we have a side and we have stability that this fan base deserves, because we've been through the ringer so many times in the last few years in particular. You know, we bemoaned sometimes not long ago during our time, mainly watching the club, isn't it? But under Moyes, how we couldn't quite punch through that glass ceiling. But to be honest, what we'd give for that now, you know, regularly pushing for Europe, in Europe, not quite getting over the line in finals for trophies. But, you know, we were a side that, let's be honest, when you consider the financial constraints we've got compared to other clubs then, and even more so now, we were punching well above our weight, weren't we? So now I think we have confirmed that status. Hopefully we can get some stability going into next year and just, again, less noise around the club. You know, we want to go the game and have moments like that derby and enjoy supporting this football club, because that's what it's all about, you know. And like I said before, it's a very special football club, Everton Football Club, and there's not many clubs like it.
I think that's epitomised as well by put this out on Twitter a couple of days ago in terms of the work the 1878s have done, which obviously is a collection of Everton fans and the work they've put in to ensure that the atmosphere at Goodison Park is as good as it can be. And, you know, the work that they've put in, as I said on Twitter, if the fan of the year is still a thing at Everton Football Club, then it goes to them. It's as simple as that, because That is not easy. You know, that's their own time. It's a huge amount of effort, ordering various flags, getting out there hours before the game to lay them out, collecting money, you know, even just running social media and showing people, listen, here's the money which has come in, this is what we spent it on, and all that. They haven't got to do that. And it's incredible what they've done to come together and ensure that, you know, we will show as a fan base how united we are, and we will show the players and the manager, we're right behind you. We know we've been dealt a really difficult hand this season, more so than the last two, you know, because of the points deduction, and we will fight until the bitter end. And I think, like Pete said, I think it's, you're hard pushed to find another fan base who will do that and who are like us. And, you know, they certainly can't accuse us of shaking our responsibility of fans of this football club, but the 1878s deserve special praise from me for what they've done. I mean, we discussed the derby, obviously, on Thursday's show, and the atmosphere was just like unlike any other I'd experienced for a long, long time. And, you know, that was because of what they've done. Make no mistake about it.
The banners, the flags, the visuals were stunning, by the way. Absolutely stunning to look at. It was like a throwback, wasn't it, looking at it? It was almost like looking at, you know, you see all those images of 70s, 80s, Gladys, and everything else, and obviously times are very different then, but banners, and it was stunning to look at, wasn't it? It really was, you know, looking at it from the Bullens or looking at it from the, you know, the main stand or wherever you are, and you're looking at that, and when the players came out, particularly against Forest, which was a big game, and obviously the derby midweek, it just gives you goosebumps when you see that. You know, you see that obviously combined with the noise and everything. 1878, the boys there deserve absolute massive credit, like you said, massive credit for what they've tried to do to sort of galvanise support. And in an era, let's be honest, where a lot of grounds now are libraries, aren't they? They are. You know, everyone lords and Sky Lord, you know, Anfield, you know, let's just mute it now and quiet down. Let's not talk. Let's listen to them sing "You'll Never Walk Alone" now. Well, straight after it, where it's just complete and utter silence. You know what I mean? And you know, they deserve huge credit. You know, the visuals especially just looked absolutely stunning to look at. And the videos that have come out from people filming it in the Gladys, you know, where you see it, all the banners around them and everything else, it's just, even talking about it now gives me a bit of, you know, a bit of goosebumps, because, you know, it was just to see. And if you're a player running out to that and you see that, it's going to give you a lift. I don't care who you are, you're going to look at that and go, wow, this is some club, this. You know, to coin Ancelotti's phrase, when he was standing there for the first time at Goodison Park, didn't he, where obviously they've caught him on camera just going, wow. And he's seen atmospheres all over the world, that guy, and even he was blown away by it. And, you know, I'm still blown away by it now when you see, you know, the atmospheres we've had this week.
I think the beauty of it, you know, with the banners that get created, it's they are throwbacks and they are classics, and it does go back to a bygone era. And sometimes you've got to look to the past to almost move forward. And I think the inspiration behind them, we all loved it, you know, our history and the classical stuff. And I think, you know, that's a big factor in it, and why it looks so good. So, you know, absolutely terrific work done by them, of course. But let's round off the show if we can with just a brief look ahead to Luton, because we don't care anymore, as I said. Who cares? We're safe. And the Sky agenda and the Sky narrative is no more. But, you know, we can't not look ahead. Obviously, it's a Friday night game. The player's going to get a few days off, according to the manager, rightly so. A few down days. Totally deserved. You know, spend some time with the families. Don't worry about football, and that's being earned. Luton, obviously, in a bad position. I think they've only won once in 14 games themselves. I think I had a match of the day last night. Obviously, lost the Wolves yesterday. But I always think Luton, funny side, always a danger in front of goal, I'd say. You know, you've got players there. You know, obviously, we know Ross Barkley, the impact he's had on that football club. He makes them tick. You've got Morris up front, he's got 10 Premier League goals this season. He's a danger. Adebayo just come back, I noticed, yesterday as well. He came on. He's been injured for quite a long period. So they've certainly got pace. They've got a threat obviously in front of goal, where I think Luton have lacked, and which is why they are where they are, is defensively they're a little bit shambolic because they are so open and they like to attack. They leave holes all over the place. But what do you think Everton's approach is going to be, Pete, to this? Because obviously, you know, we are safe. You know, the players will get some time off now. Let's see who comes soon. Obviously, yesterday's game, you know, Dom should be fit. He's been a bit unwell, hasn't he? Which he played when he was sick against Liverpool and had a bit of a niggly knee. He got a bit of a down day yesterday. What do you think the approach will be from Everton? Do you think it's just going to be very much, and Sean Dyche did say, James Tarkowski had said, after the game in the changing rooms, we finish professionally. You know, there's no sort of letting up. We do our job. Do you think that'll be the case against Luton on Friday?
I hope so. I hope so for several reasons, but I don't expect to see any significant changes in setup or how we play or how we approach the game. I think what I would like to see is maybe just a little bit of freedom, a bit more freedom in terms of Decore. Presumably he will start. Decore getting a bit closer to whether it's Calvert-Lewin or Chimiti. I know you mentioned kind of first half, Dyche made some comments about a bit of a tactical tweak. And I think that was really, it was really evident in our performance, wasn't it? I think Chimiti was very, very isolated. I thought he did a brilliant job. Not just relative to his age. I think he did a really good job for any lone striker playing that role in that system. But I think it would be good to see our centre-forward get a little bit more support and for us to be a bit more attacking. I'm not saying to play with the handbrake off necessarily, and I'm not expecting some kind of four roll, but I think it would be good to see a bit more attacking impetus and a bit more flow. So whether the manager and the team feel that they've got license to relax a little bit, and you know, it's cheesy to say, isn't it? But yeah, enjoy your football a little bit more, because it is job done now. And yeah, that doesn't mean that we have to kind of down tools and we can let standards slip, but does it mean that we can approach the game in a bit of a different way? I think obviously Luton have got everything to play for, haven't they? And I think Forest play the next day away to Sheffield United. And I just can't help but think Sheffield United still have a role to play. And despite going down and shipping goals, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they grabbed a draw or a sneaky 1-0 over Forest. So I think it's going to be a really, really difficult game for us, particularly being at Luton as well. So I'm going into Friday with minimal expectations, but I suppose my expectations are that we give it a really good go, and it'd be good to see us get on the front foot and try to attack and maybe not have to play quite so conservatively as obviously we've had to in order to protect points and get results.
I think we had Adam on the show the other day, didn't we, talking about Forest, and thought he was a very good guest, by the way. And I know, Mike, you thought that as well. I thought he spoke very, very, very eloquently about his club and about, you know, I wanted him to come on and talk about his thoughts on Forest themselves and obviously how they see the points deductions and everything else. And I want Forest to stay up. I've always had a fond spot for Forest anyway, but I want them to stay up because, you know, they've had points taken off as well, obviously for different reasons for Everton, but it makes a mockery and a farce of the league. And they have got some tough games. They've got City today. You know, I just hope they get some in against City today, if I'm being honest. I can't have City winning 6 out of 7 and not having any charges to answer for. You know, Masters apparently was asked about it, wasn't he, this week? And his response was, it will happen in the near future. Which is, it just makes a mockery of the league, the fact that you've got a team that are going to win potentially 6 out of the last 7. And let's be honest, there were a penalty shootout against Madrid from probably, you know, having a really good chance of winning another treble 2 years in a row. I think if City win the league this year, I think there'll be a lot of questions asked, you know. I don't think it'll be lauded. Obviously, there'll be some that will laud it, and rightly so, because Guardiola and as a team on the pitch are brilliant. But it just feels a bit vacuous, doesn't it? The fact that we've gone through what we've gone through this season, and so Forest, and they're just sitting there on the top of the tree, having nothing to answer for, and it makes a mockery of the league. So, you know, on a slight side note, I hope Forest do get something, and I hope they stay up. You know, everyone's sort of, you know, Sky have been twisting the narrative of poor old Luton, they've been affected by this. You know, no, I'm sorry, Luton wouldn't be anywhere near this if it wasn't for these points deductions. Let's have that right as well. And then as much as they have been brave with the squad they've got and the finances they've got, and Rob's done a great job there, but you know, I'm not having this old poor old Luton, you know, BS knocking about, and I hope we go there and we are professional and we do try and win the game. I imagine it will, because the way they play is very sort of, you know, gung-ho. I can imagine Dyche taking the handbrake off a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised to see there being a few goals in this.
Lee, yeah. I just want to say, mate, I feel complete opposite to you. I hope Forest go crashing down. And when they do, I'm going to get myself a little cup. And when they've all got the little whingy crying faces on the last game of the season, I'll be collecting all the tears and I'm having a lovely little... Right, because they never should have come up in the first place. Everyone forgets this. They never should have come up in the first place. It was, you know, we use the word corrupt a lot. Honestly, go back to that playoff final and look at some of the decisions that were made. It was all part of the story and the narrative. Everybody wanted them to, well, say everybody, Sky wanted them to come up, so they came up. And then, you know, yes, they've got a points deduction, but it's very different from what's happened to us. You couldn't write the mad set of circumstances that I'm not going to list that have obviously led us to minimally breaching and getting absolutely panned by the Premier League. Forest have spent happy to you know, obviously to try and keep themselves in the league. They've gambled. They've taken a big gamble and it hasn't paid off. And now they're paying the price, but they're utterly indignant about it. And I think the way that they're acting as a club, it's completely unprofessional, and it is bringing the game into disrepute. And by the way, for anyone that wants to say it, I'd say the same thing. If Everton would have lost the game against Forest and come out and made that statement, I'd be the first one on this podcast to say it's embarrassing what the club doing, blah, blah, blah. So I hope Forest go crashing down. I think Rob Edwards has done an amazing job at Luton. I think you're right. Without the points deductions, I don't think Luton would have had as much belief or hope that's, you know, probably help them to be on the coattails of, you know, the likes of us and now Forest. But yeah, Forest need to get out of the Premier League, and I hope it happens to them because they fully, fully deserve it.
I wish we could get Adam on this now, right? Just to see Pete and Adam going at it here now. after that comment, I love it.
But that little noise that he made then, when about the tears, was a bit like Stifler in American Pie when he's talking about milking a dog or something. That was a bit of a throwback to our older fans there. You know, a little bit of retro comedy. Watch it if you can.
It's a bit of Anthony Hopkins, Silence of the Lambs, that, mate.
Well, yeah, of course. For those even older, but I wasn't around then, but you probably were. So well before my time. But no, we've had a chat, didn't we, after the game about Forest, and I think, yeah, I don't think they've done themselves any kind of favours in terms of how they dealt with various things. You know, in recent sort of weeks and months, you know, you look at the situation with the goal and Liverpool scored against them, and the owner was on the pitch and all things like that. You look at the statements, which the owner wanted to release at half-time against Everton over the penalty situation. And obviously surrounding their punch deduction, it is different to us in terms of how they came about breaching PSR. But, you know, it's a crazy set of circumstances. And I don't care about anyone other than Everton. And it's as simple as that. And, you know, whoever goes down now. You know, Burnley are putting up a bit of a fight. And listen, hopefully they can pick up a few more points and take it to the last game against Forest. You know, when you've got them, I think they've got Forest at home, which is what a way to end the season there. And that could be the real relegation decider. So again, out of our hands, Luton's our next game. Atmosphere will be key, I think, for Luton in terms of it's a tight ground, isn't it? It's a small ground. Obviously, they're on the pitch. The fans, they make a real racket. But we owe them one, as far as I'm concerned. We got beat Baden twice this season, which is appalling. You know, that one in the league was shocking, and the FA Cup was probably just as bad. So we certainly owe them something. Whether that's a put, you know, we get a point or we can take all three. The players have got to be feeling great, haven't they, in terms of, you know, in 4 out of 5. you know, we've turned our whole season around in the space of effectively sort of 2 weeks after that Burnley win, which nobody saw coming. And the fact that, as I said at the start of the show, the whole Sky Sports agenda and narrative is now going to have to shift because they set it all up. And Sean Dyche ripped up the script, and it's as simple as that. And we go there now totally relaxed, and that's great. It's great for us. We can watch a game relaxed before, obviously, our final home game of the season against Sheffield United, which hopefully we can give the players a good send-off because, obviously, as it wasn't possible last season, would have been the last game of the season when we stayed up. But I think we need to show the players and the manager our appreciation because we've done our part, of course, but the ones who are out on the pitch and the ones who are responsible for putting in a performance and getting things ready before a game, they're the ones who deserve it. So I look forward to that. But let's have our predictions if we can. Pete, Luton on Friday, what are you saying?
I'm going to completely contradict what I said earlier. 3-3 draw, goal fest.
Lee?
It's going to be. I think, like I said, Luton will definitely not come forward. And there we see a Sean Dyche side in the mould of Ozzy Ardiles sticking Michael Keane up front with wingers either side of him, and then a full blown attack. So I'm going to say 3-2 Everton. Like you said, we own them one. We do own them one this year because they've had a couple of results at our ground. Certainly the one in the cup I didn't think was just, but we need to go there, and that'll be the team talk from Dyche, won't it? Let's give these one, they've come to our gaff and got a result. Let's come here and hopefully send them down and keep Forest up, Pete.
I'm gonna say 2-2, score draw. I think say they are open. I know, listen, we've been great at the back, of course. But they will come, and they'll come. And I think even with Luton, what you find is even if you get a couple of goals ahead, you're never really safe, especially at Kenilworth Road. They will keep on going, and that's, credits to them in terms of their approach. But like you said, Lee, they wouldn't have even been part of this conversation if it wasn't for points deductions, and that's just the honest truth. So they have a go, and I think, given the fact that we are safe, I think that will play into our mind a little bit. So I'm going to say a 2-2 draw, but that's us for today. But before we go, just a little reminder, if you can, to make sure that you do like and subscribe across all the platforms. There we are on YouTube as well for a few little bits and pieces. So make sure that you subscribe to the YouTube channel, obviously on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all your favorite places to find your podcast. Obviously get followers on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We don't do TikTok, because Pete can't dance, so we don't get involved with TikToks. If you can see Pete's face now, but no, on everything else, we're all there. We appreciate your support. The season obviously has still got a few games to go. Been a tough season. It's been tough to record, but believe me, at times when you get beat 6-0 by Chelsea, or you don't win a game for 3.5 months, it's tough. Believe me, we don't underestimate how hard it is at times to listen to and to listen to any kind of Everton content during those times. So anyone who does listen, we don't take that for granted. We'll keep going with the monthly competitions. Obviously, the latest one has just been drawn on Friday. The shares will be getting shipped out tomorrow or Tuesday to our winner. We've got the Fantasy League obviously coming to an end this month, or May, should I say, over the next few weeks. So £75 to the winner of that, whoever that might be. So all sorts going on. We'll keep going over the summer. Let's hope off the field stuff is sorted sooner rather than later, and we can start to look forward to Goodison Park's final season in the Premier League before we move to Bramley Moor. But we'll be back ourselves next weekend to look back on that Luton game and look ahead to our final home game of the season against Sheffield United. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.